This week on The Droids, we've got more Mandalorian news. Pedro Pascal talks about how the Mando's different than Boba Fett. Images come out about the series and the First Order. We're going to learn more about how it formed. All that and more this week on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. And can you hear it? Can you hear the buttons buttoning up out here? Because the buttoned up boys are back. It's Mike and Sam on another podcast. This one straight shooting, getting straight to the news, all the information. Sam, this is one of those straight-laced podcasts that everybody dreams about.
All right, I want a tight, orderly pod, no hitting below the belt, no riffing, no pan downs, no nothing, no hot takes, no hot and freshes.
I don't know. The way we're describing this, Sam, it kind of sounds like we're fitting into the Empire or the First Order, because if there's anybody who's really buttoned up in the Star Wars galactic universe, it's the First Order and the Empire.
Well, I'll tell you what, they got a better score.
Oh, fair.
And it's an audio medium. No, if you took the four of us, if you took the four droidy boys, and you had to divide them, and you said, two of you got to be Empire, and two of you got to be Rebels or Resistance. Look, man, you and I got to face it. We'd be Empire, and I don't like it any more than you do. I don't like it any more than you do. But look, those two, Chris and Ryan are loosey-goosey. They're off on Tatooine. Moisture farmers.
Are they scruffy-looking nerf herders? Is that what you're trying to say?
They're a couple of scruffy-looking nerf herders for sure.
Oh, we love those wild boys.
I just said that they were a couple of moisture farmers, which sounds like potentially a real insult about something.
This is a PG-rated Disney-acceptable podcast. Keep it there, Sam.
Okay, well then, that's all I'll say. They farm moisture.
I will say, Sam, I have been commented on before as well. Your haircut looks like you work for the Secret Service, so I take it that means I do fit in for the Empire or you know anybody in the First Order. So, all right, so droid cosplay, we know where we all stand, and we'll look forward to that for Halloween.
Moisture farmer would be such a good, like, you know how they redub movie, like that should be on the Die Hard, like when TNT airs Die Hard, it should be like yippee-ki-yay, moisture farmer.
I think that needs to happen now. That's
also, my God, how dead on was that Bruce Willis impression? I mean, it was practically like he was in the room, right? I should do this for a living.
I mean, it's just as good as your Chris impersonation, so I think we're good. You can get anybody in, anybody on the pod that we want, Sam can bring them.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, write in who you want to hear. And maybe he or she will appear on the pod.
Ooh, that's tantalizing. So email us,
droidspod. Yeah, I definitely didn't make that promise, but
droidspod@gmail.com, Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, droidspod on Twitter and Instagram, and the Droids Podcast on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Let us know what you think about the pod. Let us know what you think about Sam's impersonations. Are they even impersonations, or do we actually have those individual people here on the pod? I'm going to go with the latter.
Yeah. Let us know what you think of our guests, question mark?
Well, before we get into all of the Mandalorian tidbits, little nuggets that have been released by Entertainment Weekly. Entertainment Weekly had, I think, four different articles over the past few days about the Mandalorian.
Great day.
What a great couple of days. That gave us some more peeks behind the curtain of what we're going to see on November 12th. But before we get to that, it's been a long time coming. There's been a lot of conversations on this podcast about when old Sam was going to watch The Last Jedi again, and we can say it's finally happened. And with that, Sam, I cede the floor to you because we want to know what you thought on finally your first full second time through. First full second really makes a lot of sense. Second time through The Last Jedi.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Wrong movie.
I know, it's the trailer. I know. I was like, was there a similar line? It was just her breathing at the beginning. Look, it's, I finally rewatched it, and I have to say, my overall takeaway was this, like, double, two very opposing views, which was, one was I was really ultimately glad that it had been so long since I'd seen it. It felt so fresh and so new. It felt like watching a new Star Wars movie in some ways.
That is the best.
It was incredibly moving and powerful. It, I'm going to tie it back. Just look, it's you and me. You know, this has got to come up. I got a reference Bond in here, but it's like, I remember like when the Bond series finally released on DVD and I got all the box sets, and it was the first time they'd been on that media. And, I'd previously basically only watched the Bond movies via the like Thanksgiving marathons and stuff, and they tend to play the really popular ones there. So there were like two or three Bond movies that I'd either never seen or only seen once or twice, and it was like that year it felt like I got a bunch of new Bond movies, and that's how it felt with The Last Jedi on this rewatch. It was just like, oh wow, like I didn't have the full impression of like having forgotten it, right? Like there wasn't anything that surprised me, like, oh, I didn't know that happened. But what it did was it reinforced for me a lot of what we said in our reaction pods, which I should go back and re-listen to. But I know we were all very, very jazzed on it, very, very hyped for it. And it's shot beautifully. It's shot incredibly. I think it's, it, if it's not the best shot Star Wars movie, the only one that I think gives it a run for the money is maybe Empire. But I think a lot of Empire's like beautiful shots might be aided by, you know, some significant sort of retouching and remastering, which is, you know, that's fair game. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do that stuff too. But, I mean, this thing is gorgeous to look at. I also, oh man, I feel like I had so many thoughts. I love the story of the movie. I love what they do. I guess like one of the things I couldn't help but do, and sorry, my thoughts are a little more disorganized than I planned, but one of the things I couldn't help but think while I was watching it was think of all the things that I'd read over the last 2 years as criticisms of the movie. And there were certain criticisms that I think over the course of the last year, I started to come not into agreement with, but coming to think like, wow, you know, well, that's a fair criticism. The most obvious or glaring one is the criticism people have of the Finn and Rose storyline being something that is, you know, either quote unquote pointless or unnecessary or, you know, disappointing or something. And criticism of Rose as a character, you know, an unnecessary or character that gets in the way of the movie. Also the whole like it's not my Luke, the Admiral Holdo storyline, like all these things that were the major criticisms of the movie. And what I have to say is watching the movie and having that packed into my head for the last 2 years and knowing that I disagreed with it, but being distant from the movie, and I could not disagree with those four criticisms more. I think we've talked a lot about the way in which I'm trying to think of the order I want to go through these. We've talked a lot about the way in which Luke is Luke. This Luke in The Last Jedi, I think, is very much the Luke of all the Star Wars movies. He was always, headstrong. He was always running before he could walk. He was always making mistakes, and his raw power was what saved him. So the idea that Luke would have catastrophically screwed up and would have led to the creation inadvertently of a Kylo Ren figure is believable. The idea that he would shoulder that guilt and walk away from it all. I mean, Luke is famously a man on like the literal hero's journey, refusal of the call. So he's someone who started his journey refusing the call. He's refusing it again and being pulled out of that. That's the story of the movie. So the idea, like, that is perfect. And the idea that it acknowledges the Jedi Order as itself, you know, problematic and failed in some ways. Yep. And then the movie communicates that actually it's not a failure and that it is worth maintaining and saving and keeping alive. So, criticism one. Debunked. Love it. Love Luke. Perfect. We've talked about that one. I talked about the Holdo and the Holdo thing. So one of the criticisms, man, we already, it's how she doesn't want to reveal her plan. The whole idea that she would even have to.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, is silly. We've covered it. But I do also think that from a storytelling perspective, it is an interesting way to use and treat Poe Dameron. I mean, we're seeing Poe Dameron being groomed into a new kind of leader, and I don't think that he is portrayed as a villain or an idiot in the piece. You know, he's still a character we're sympathetic to. He's still a character where we are agreeing with him that, you know, we're seeing the fleet slowly be destroyed, and we're seeing him want answers and being someone who's incapable of letting someone else, like trusting someone else not to lead them into failure. But similarly, we learn that he was wrong. He was wrong in that assumption, and it took that being wrong twice in this movie for him to learn new ways to lead at the end and when to walk away from a fight, which was something that it would seem he hadn't previously known how to do. So that's a great storyline. It's great. It's brilliant. It's perfect. And then lastly, the Finn and Rose stuff, which is, I think, is the one that maybe hearing people talk about the way the whole journey to Canto Bight, like, ultimately doesn't have anything to do with, like, where, like, narratively, like, where the plot of the movie goes. Like, it is ultimately a you know, irrelevant side quest that they go on. And in terms of plot, but I think then you're missing story.
Yep.
The idea is that, you know, Finn is again in this position that is so, you know, central to Star Wars as, you know, as the hero figure who's refusing the call, and he's the hero who is denying his heroism and is scared and is trying to run away. And so, but through Rose and through the journey to Canto Bight and their own rebellion within a rebellion, his character progresses, and we get a sense of, like, Finn gets something to fight for. And it's not like, it's not a girl. It's not like he wins the girl to go fight for her. It's that he learns, like, what is corrupt about the galactic society that they live in, and he sees it and he witnesses it firsthand, and he witnesses goodness both from Rose and the kids and the Fathiers that they race on. I was like, the Canto Bight sequence is absolutely necessary in Super Star Wars, and the idea that she stops his sacrifice, which people criticize, they say, you know, like, it would have been stronger for Finn to actually sacrifice himself. It wouldn't have been. It does. The fact that he chose and decided to sacrifice himself is the strong story decision. So it doesn't matter whether or not he succeeded. What matters is that he was willing to. And so the fact that Finn was willing to sacrifice himself for his friends and for the resistance, and he was willing to die to stick it to the First Order, doesn't mean that he had to die for that decision to mean something.
Yeah.
Like, the weight of that decision is on him carried forward.
Which is what makes that moment where he says rebel scum after like countering Phasma, saying, you know, or what, you know, what's that moment she says, you'll always be scum, and he's like, rebel scum. I'm messing up the line, I think. But in that moment, it's him embracing who he is from the opposite of who he was, not only at the beginning of The Force Awakens, but the beginning of The Last Jedi. He was still trying to run. And now he's found something to fight for, and he's found his purpose, and he's willing to own that, and that's who his character is, which is what makes it so powerful of a transition for that story.
Yeah, the movie's great. It's like, to me, it truly, the rewatch, like, reinforced in a weird way that it's like, I think it's pretty unequivocally great.
It really,
like, I actually think that it's pretty, like, hard to, like, I'm fine with, I think if somebody who's critical of it wants to say it wasn't the Star, like, I think the only argument I'd accept at this point is, like, it wasn't the Star Wars movie I wanted.
Like, is that really an acceptable answer, though? I mean, I don't think that's acceptable just because...
Yeah, I think it is, because... well, here's why I'd say it. I think that is acceptable, because I think, like... I think I would say that about certain movies in other franchises I like. I think there are movies I would say, like, this isn't the movie I wanted, and so it bums me out, and so I don't like it. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay. I think if you're saying it's a bad movie, like, I think you're pretty objectively wrong. And I don't see a way, like, if you're saying it's a bad movie, I don't think it's constructed poorly. I don't think it's shot poorly. I don't think it's acted poorly. I don't think it's conceived poorly. And I don't think it betrays any of the larger story arc, which seems to be the thing that people really latch onto, which I'm like, how do you know what Star Wars was supposed to be? Well, you don't.
Well, that's,
you know,
but that's,
like,
that's the problem. So, is that expectation? If you're coming in with a specific expectation, well, then of course you're going to be disappointed. You can't come in with the story being something you have in mind that it should be. You've got to come in open with the person who's been given the reins to write this story is now the one telling the Star Wars story. And I think expectation is where you run into a lot of downfalls. I mean, you can be excited about a movie, but if you put certain expectations of I need to know who Snoke is and why Snoke's important, you're not going to be happy.
Oh, that was always silly to me. Snoke was, like, the weakest part of Force Awakens. Like, Snoke looked so bad, he looked so cheesy, and then they made him look really, really good in The Last Jedi, and they made his throne room super cool, and they, like, set him up and actually made him worthwhile in The Last Jedi, which was, like, Rian Johnson made him a worthwhile character, and then he also, by virtue of doing so, had the right to kill him off and did so, and everybody got mad, and I was like... He still, as a good version of Snoke, wasn't as interesting as Adam Driver's Kylo Ren.
No, it's
like,
never as interesting.
People are like, it. The arguments are so weak and stupid. I'm sorry. Like, if you didn't like it, I'm sorry. I would say if you truly didn't like it and didn't think it felt or, like, worked like a Star Wars movie to you, I would question, like, if... Like, I would wonder if you're, like, actually a Star Wars fan or if you just liked something else about... Like, if there's some element, if it's like, oh, are you just, like, you like a space adventure or, like, you like Luke, you're a Luke Skywalker fan. Because, like, I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, I don't see how people, I don't know. I cried so much Sunday morning when I watched this. I was just, like, every 5 minutes, I was, like, getting weepy over another scene. It's a movie. It's an adventure film about friends, like, learning and working together and sacrificing themselves, like, for one another. It doesn't get better than that, like, in terms of, like, emotional stakes. It's a great movie. And I think that I don't think that they're going to be able to send, no matter how they use him, I don't think Mark Hamill's going to get a better send-off than he did in The Last Jedi. And, you know, maybe what, however they use him, in The Rise of Skywalker will really satisfy some fans who didn't get what they wanted. And if so, I guess great, but, like, his best moment, his Luke Skywalker's best moment happened in The Last Jedi for me.
Wow.
So that's not even a question.
I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just, like, these are some hot takes. I think you got to give them that because I think a lot of people would make other arguments, but you're valid in the way you're coming at
this. Yeah, well, they don't have the mic, and I'm the one talking. I'm in your ears. Come at me.
Well,
don't come at me. Don't like, I'm truly not confrontational. This movie was so, so good, and I had such a good experience with it this weekend, and it was only my second experience, which is, like, also special. Wow. I just really... Guys, I love Star Wars. I love it. I'm so excited for Star Wars.
Speaking of tears over the weekend about Star Wars, one thing that was interesting that kind of caught a lot of steam in the Star Wars Twitter universe is if those of you who were paying attention to a live tweet of 8 films, like 9, I think she might have watched Rogue One as well, a Twitter user named Mar, and I think her Twitter account is Vibes with Cisco, live tweeted everything from Star Wars, Empire, Return of the Jedi, into the sequel trilogy. I believe she did the prequels as well. Maybe watched the original trilogy, went back to the prequels, then watched the sequel trilogy. live tweeted the entire thing, gave nicknames to every character. It really seemed to catch fire with a lot of people. It was funny. It was emotional. The insight into someone experiencing Star Wars for the first time without the baggage of anybody else having told them what they should expect or what should be going into the movies or if they should be upset about this in the prequels or this in the sequels. This raw reaction really meant a lot to a lot of people, and it got a lot of attention. I thought there were some great moments within her live tweeting, but my favorite thing was Rian Johnson at one point chimed in when Mara was tweeting about The Last Jedi because she was watching it on an internet stream. And it kept pausing on her because of her internet connection. So Rian Johnson said, "I can't take this anymore. I'm postmating you a Blu-ray." And all I thought was, you better postmate a Blu-ray player as well, because most people don't even have either one anymore because everybody's so really stuck in the streaming wars that's what they're focused on. So I still thought it was a great moment that he recognized it. A lot of other people in Star Wars, Mark Hamill at one point, tweeted as well. It was just a nice moment to kind of see the power of Star Wars for someone who had never seen it before and relive your own experience having watched any of these movies for the first time by hearing someone's genuine, unfiltered, uninfluenced reaction to all of these movies. And it was really kind of special.
That, I mean, it sounds great. I missed this. I was having my own private mental retweet with just you guys, you boys on the text chain. Of my rewatch, but yeah, it sounds great. This actually calls up a question. As a fan of franchises, of many a franchise, there is on the big ones, Star Wars, the James Bonds, the Batman movies, the things that I I'm trying to think of other things that have run that, like maybe like the Star Trek TV series and movies, that it comes up where it's like, how do you introduce people to it? Whether it's a significant other or your child someday that you have, how do you introduce them and when do you do it and which ones do you start with? And, a lot of thought goes into that for some people. And I think that my honest answer, Marvel movies would be a good one too, that, now it's like, well, where do you do it? And I think my honest answer is I discovered all these things and my love of these franchises independent of anyone introducing me to them. And I think I don't think I have an answer to this question. I don't think I would force it on anybody. If someone said, no, really, like, I should watch, I think my answers generally are either with, like, there's two answers. It's like either the current iteration, like, or the very first release date order for anything. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, and I'm trying to think across franchises here, which is why I'm not naming specific films. But like, Mike, is that something that weighs on you? Do you think about introduction? Do you feel differently? Do you feel that part of being a fan is proselytizing and evangelizing the series? Like, where do you fall on
that? Well, I get out in a fire truck and I drive straight to people's house when I hear they're about to watch Star Wars to tell them exactly the order they should watch it in.
What do you want? I live in Brooklyn. there's a window.
I feel like it's been the standard in my mind, but I feel like a lot of the firm rules that I felt like I had earlier in my life are starting to fade. I would have said always watch it in the order they came out. Like, watch them the way that they were made and the way that they were, intended to be viewed. Now, obviously,
the way God intended. Yeah, that's what you're trying to say.
Yes, of course. But I mean, you could say the prequels were meant to be seen as the first iteration, so maybe you should go back and watch from the beginning there. I think my entry points I would recommend to anybody are, of course, Star Wars and then The Force Awakens. That's probably what's changed more so, is that I feel like there are a lot of people that initially I would have said, no, you have to watch the original Star Wars. You cannot watch anything else. There are people who are too ingrained in the current way that films are made, that to introduce them to something that I would say in no way is slow, but a lot of people would compare to today's filmmaking, is not their pacing and not their style. The Force Awakens is a better entry point, sadly, because we are conditioned to watch things in a certain way. So I do think that the original trilogy and Star Wars is always the preferred method. It's the method that I will introduce my son when I I have had this discussion on the pod. I feel like when he, I wish I could wait till he was 7 or 8 years old, but there's no way he's going to get that far. So I'll probably show it to him earlier than that. But I will show him at an age where maybe he hasn't watched a lot of movies, so he doesn't know what the best kind of pacing is, and he can watch Star Wars for the first time and not feel like it's out of place. So I think there's many ways in now, and any way into Star Wars is a great way into Star Wars. I do want to say before we move on, though, if you've not read those tweets, and Sam, I know you haven't, go and look them up. Vibes with Cisco, Mar, find the start of the thread of one of the films and just enjoy. Because she's got great perspective and pretty hilarious moments throughout. So if you have a chance, find that on Twitter. Let's get to the Mandalorian talk. There's a number of different pieces that came out on Entertainment Weekly, but a lot of it was very basic tidbits, not a whole lot to really go on. However, I'll take anything at this point because I just want to see anything about what's coming up in Star Wars. So give me any morsel and I am thrilled. What we found out is that there are a couple of big things in this. Pedro Pascal had some comments. We also heard about the First Order. There's a new image that was just released when we're recording this podcast of Gina Carano and Pedro Pascal looking like they're ready for a fist fight. Pedro Pascal in the Mandalorian costume.
With someone else.
Like, yes, not with
sorry,
each other.
Because I think my assumption, I'm just jumping, I know we're going out of order, but my assumption was that Gina Carano was going to be an antagonistic figure to Pedro Pascal, potentially like a permanently antagonistic figure. I didn't actually think of the idea of them teaming up, but this image that was released suggests that they have at least one common enemy in the series.
Well, and we found a little bit more information. I don't believe we've heard this before, but Gina Carano is supposed to be a former shock trooper. So after the fall of the Empire, this all takes place in this in-between time before the rise of the First Order. We'll find out more about the First Order in this series as well. But everybody's fending for themselves, and it appears that Carano was a member of the Empire, her character, as a shock trooper, which... Do we recall? I don't recall shock troopers being really a part of it until maybe the First Order in the sequel trilogy. I don't recall them in the original trilogy.
I don't know what shock troopers are. I'm sorry. I don't remember. Which ones are shock troopers?
Well, so that's the question, because I think shock troopers, I don't know we've had one defined before, but you could certainly see that any of the First Order individual troopers who had those shock kind of weapons that we saw in The Last Jedi, that I think we saw in the first, in The Force Awakens, when that one trooper was about to attack Finn. I don't recall them before that, but there's a possibility that there was a version of those kind of troopers in the time period of the Age of the Rebellion, as we're now calling it. And now we're kind of learning a little bit more about it.
I'm looking it up. It seems like we might be... I think our definition might be off. It seems like they seem to be sort of like a Navy SEAL or like a Swiss Guard type level trooper of like they're, as I'm looking up just what shock troopers are, they're like, they date back. There's like clone shock troopers.
Oh, I got it.
And
yep.
They're like
okay,
red. They're red and white armored, and they're like heavy. They're heavier artillery. They can be Imperial Guard, or they can be, you know, more like frontline stuff. So I think maybe the definition was off. And like, I've seen this imagery, but not being all the way through Clone Wars or Rebels or all the animated stuff, I don't know it super well, but it's cool to know. I mean, I think what it says is basically she was an Imperial soldier who was more elite, you know, who was not a stormtrooper. She was something more, and that's pretty cool.
And apparently she wasn't a clone, because I don't think she looks anything like Jango Fett.
Well, no, I'm kidding. That's a joke.
I mean, you look. The other image, so we've seen two images now that came out this week of the Mandalorian, is a battle between the Mandalorian and a couple of Trandoshans, as we know Bosk from The Empire Strikes Back. Neither of these are Bosk, but they are of the same species. And it is, I think, Sam, you had a pretty interesting take on this image when you saw it for the first time.
Yeah, man. I thought it looked like a couple action figures. I thought it looked like, so there's people, if, I, so I, I, currently I'm off Instagram. I don't, I've deactivated my account. Pushes glasses up nose, doesn't have glasses. But I think it's like really common on Instagram. There's like a certain community of people who like will stage scenes using like action figures, using either the super, you know, hot toy, super accurate hot toys, or sometimes 7-inch figures that from like the Black series. And some people even take it further and like add backgrounds and add, you know, effects like lightsabers or blasters going off or something. And when I saw this image, which is a, you know, presumably a set photo, I've got to think this was a setup and not actually like a documentary shot of the making of the show.
Yeah,
because it's so crisp. There's no motion in it, even though they're like all staged and posed. It, because everyone's in either, you know, a full on costume and helmet or like full on prosthetics, it looks like action figures to me.
Yep.
It just like, it looks like toys. It looks like they're all 6 inches. That's what I'm saying.
But you're right. I've seen that photography very commonplace now, where people are doing really great recreations or shots that they would like to see in a movie, speaking of expectations, and they've made them look very realistic, and this feels similarly. And it's also because, again, we're not seeing Pedro Pascal's face. We continue to have not seen him out of the mask so far in any of the imagery of The Mandalorian. But speaking...
It's like, I was just going to say, I mean, it's kind of like for, you know, if Favs, if you're listening, because I know you are, and you're probably thinking like, yeah, man, that's what the experience was like, playing with action figures. Isn't that what everybody who makes a Star Wars says?
Gareth Edwards did. I'm sure JJ said it at some point.
I feel like that's the line right now with like the era of comic book movies and the Star Wars like franchise reinvigorated, is like the idea that it's just like, oh man, it's like getting to be a kid again, playing with all your action figures. It's like, okay, well, you're making movies with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the budget and real human beings acting as those action figures. So,
well,
sounds pretty cool. Sounds a little better than like playing on the carpet. But whatever.
Sam, what you're saying is that the droids need to all get together and make a short film of toys on a carpet, and then we'll be given our next own Star Wars project.
Yeah, if we were 8 and then spent the next 20 years pursuing only that passion, sure. Yeah, I think that's possible.
You mean like we all intended and that we mostly did, and then at one point gave up and pursued other sad things?
This pod is a collection of broken dreams and broken men. Oh, I'm kidding. Boy. No, we're very happy in our lives. This is good, everybody.
Hey, we're talking Star Wars. We're talking new Star Wars shows. What's wrong with that? Nothing possibly wrong in our lives at that point. But the Mandalorian armor, interesting. There's two things I want to say about it. First of all, have you noticed that in any of the recent teaser trailer, as well as the still images, the Mando outfit is a lot more colorful than the original released image. The first image,
yes,
it looked like everything was kind of uniform. You know, the helmet was silver, but it was a lot of like dark red, kind of brownish armor. And now when you look at it, it's green and red, and one is like he's got a shin guard that's a different color than the rest, and part of that makes you feel that he's pieced this together from armor that he's found throughout his time, which very well could be the case. However, the one thing we learned in another one of the Entertainment Weekly pieces is that Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Pedro Pascal all said he is a Mandalorian. Unlike Boba Fett, who was a clone who adopted the Mandalorian armor and kind of the persona and mentality of a Mandalorian, this character, whose name we don't know, he's just the Mandalorian at this point, actually is a Mandalorian and is defined by that culture. So we're going to learn a lot more about the planet beyond what we've already known through the Clone Wars. So Sam, you, and then even myself, I've not watched all the Clone Wars. There's going to be a great opportunity to dive deeper into the mythos and the mythology, the lore of Mandalore. Oof. Didn't mean to do that, but we got there anyway.
I like it. I definitely think you're right in terms of the color palette. Just to address like some of the stuff you said, I do think, but here's what I'd say about that. I think the show, the series itself is and probably always was going to look somewhere smack in the middle of that first image and the images we're seeing now. I don't think the still images that we're seeing released are an indication of you know, a tonal shift or oh, they're doing, you know, they're color correcting in post or whatever. Like, I don't think it's that. I think what it is I think that's the marketing team, and I think that's the marketing team feeling out their way around. You know, I think when it was initially announced, you know, they're thinking, oh, it's a Western, this is a strong silent type, it's, you know, it's in the vacuum created between the, you know, with the loss of the Empire before the First Order, the power vacuum, and so it's very desaturated and everything. And I think now they're running with you know, everything that's been a success at Marvel and Disney for the last few years has been a brightly colored Taika Waititi Marvel movie. And so they're like really, you know, saturating the images. I think this is all marketing. I think it's all, you know, what the press wants to run and what they think is going to grab people. But I think until we see the show in motion, I mean, it's going to look like what it looks like in the trailer, you know, yep. That's what the show is going to look like. That's what the color is going to be. One thing I will say, I mean, you know, Mandalorian armor and look and style has, you know, captivated audiences since the holiday special, really, since they released the action figure, you know, before
Chris is gonna
Empire
love that
even.
Comment.
People have been so excited and kind of like inspired by the just look and feel of this guy that started with Boba Fett. The Mandalorian looks awesome. The costuming looks great. The style looks great. I think it's very cool that he's a true Mandalorian. I think it's cool that they've actually come out and truly like defined and said it's not Boba Fett, it's not related to Boba Fett, we want to make that clear, this is a different thing. All of that said, Boba Fett still looks cooler. Boba Fett's so cool looking. Like the just like the way they did the weathering, the way stuff like doesn't fit quite as well, the way it's like green and it, like Boba Fett's just a little, he's a jetpack.
Yeah, give it some time.
Are you aware?
Give it some time. Okay. I bet you will see a jetpack on the Mandalorian. I also
jetpacks in the Rise of Skywalker too, so you might be right.
I think you give it some time, and I also feel like you might feel differently after a season, maybe two seasons, maybe three seasons of a character being in the forefront, where you see so much of him, and then you realize, oh, there's a lot more to this character than there ever was to Boba Fett. And maybe
Mike, that's
like
the dream. My God, that's the dream.
Well, we know we're getting two seasons. We don't know that we're getting beyond two, but we're definitely getting two seasons. Last thing to take away from all of these little tidbits, it was mentioned that The Mandalorian will explore the origins of the First Order. And the way that it's going to do that is that kind of, as we talked about the end of Return of the Jedi, the aftermath of the fall of the Empire, you know, what happens? What happens to all of those loyal Imperial troopers who no longer have a leader, who no longer have a second Death Star? How do they then become the First Order? And with that, it's kind of this lawless middle ground, which is very fitting within the Western kind of motif of what we know we're going to find out about the Mandalorian. But there's the quote from Dave Filoni, which is, this doesn't turn into a good guy universe because you blew up two Death Stars. You get the Rebels one, and they're trying to establish a Republic, but there's no way that that could have set in for everybody all at once. You have in a Western where you're out on the frontier, and there might be Washington, and there might be some marshals, but sometimes good luck finding one. So it's much more of this open world. There's going to be allegiances, but it's not going to be as defined. And people are going to try to be taking advantage of situations, especially someone who might be a bounty hunter. So great opportunity to see what this was all like in the aftermath. Maybe he's going to undercut the happy ending of the Return of the Jedi a bit. But then we'll see how the First Order kind of came about and how they kind of grew from those ashes of the Empire like we were told in The Force Awakens.
I mean, this is what's so exciting, right? This is why it's so exciting, and why the quote unquote gaps in the chronology, or like gaps in the lore, or you know, whatever. It's why this is a good thing, right? Because it's fertile ground for more storytelling, and what, you know, what Filoni and Favreau do in this period isn't going to take, like, I would say it potentially could, yes, Mike, if you want to think on like the global scale, like does it take away from the happy ending of Last Jedi? Maybe, but no more so than The Force Awakens did, right? By
absolutely
establishing that there was a new First Order. And that's, you know, the beauty of the storytelling is that when you have these holes in the chronology and the canon, the gaps in the canon, that's the word I was trying to find, the gaps in the canon are opportunities. And I think what Filoni said there about, like, comparing it to something we've all kind of learned about the American Revolution and, like, what happens in that kind of lawless period, what happens in the Wild West, it really paints it, you know, super clearly. It's an interesting time to explore. And then I think what was also interesting, and I should have mentioned this earlier when you brought up Pedro Pascal's comments about, you know, decidedly being a Mandalorian and not being Boba Fett, it's interesting, you know, he talked about that this character, Boba Fett was ultimately, for the purposes of Empire and Last Jedi, he was a bad guy. You know, he wasn't the big bad, but he was a bad guy. He was a bounty hunter. He was out to, he didn't care about anybody, and he was an antagonist to one of our heroes. But, you know, this guy's got to be the protagonist of the show. This guy, ultimately, no matter if he's a bounty hunter or what, Pedro Pascal indicates he's got a good heart. He's ultimately a good guy, or trying to do a good thing or something. And it's like, that's good to hear also. I think it was probably safe to assume, but I wouldn't have been able to really deal with a story where it's like, you know, a Breaking Bad story is not what I want from this, you know?
Well, speaking of Breaking Bad, though, I didn't read this until just now. There is more information about Giancarlo Esposito, character actor from Breaking Bad.
Who is also an Atlantic Theater Company ensemble member who I've met a couple times when I used to work there.
Da-da-da. So when's he on the pod there, Sam? And I mean for real, not you impersonating him.
Let me shoot him an email.
Please make that happen soon. So coming from Breaking Bad as Gus Fring, he is now playing, and I don't think we had this name before, Moff Gideon, a former Imperial governor who is now set adrift in the wake of the Emperor's downfall. So one possibility could be that Gideon seeks to reunite the scattered, broken factions of the Empire. That's speculation from Entertainment Weekly, but you know he's still using his power, considering he was at one point an Imperial governor.
That's so good. And also, like, oh man, this is the kind of stuff I also just love. Like, I love that they're still using Moff. You know what I mean? Like,
he's not a Grand Moff. He's just a Moff.
He's not a Grand Moff, but that's appropriate. He's just lower, like, on the totem pole. But, like, just the consistency. I think, like, there's certain things. We take jabs collectively. We take jabs at Favreau, but in truth, I'm very much a pro Favreau guy. I think he seems great. I think he's made a lot of stuff that I like. But I do think in these interviews, hearing how involved Filoni is and hearing how much he is co-answering questions with Favreau is really encouraging to me. And again, that's not to disparage Favreau. What I mean is that's saying that's the two heads are better than one. That's saying that two people who make things I like working together on a thing I really like is exciting. And I think that he is someone who's he dropped something about how he, like, in one of the interviews that you shared with me, he, you know, dropped how, like, well, this is what George would have said about this or that or something. And it's like, yeah, you're the guy who, like, you're the standard bearer, you're the torch bearer of George. You're the closest thing we have, kind of, in a weird way. And Favreau is a guy who knows how to come out swinging and kick off a franchise, you know? and so I think it's an exciting team to make this. I'm so excited for the show, and it's really been in the last, like, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks that I've always been interested by the idea. I was always going to watch it. Obviously, I signed up for I prepaid for 3 years of the service this week.
I was going to say, are you a Disney Plus member subscriber already? Because I am, and you know, it's a pretty good deal if you got in early.
Yeah,
it's a little too late. I mean, it's a little bit unfair to now taunt those listeners who have not had a chance to already sign up.
Is it closed? Is the window closed?
Expired as of Labor Day, so.
All right. Well, I'm glad I brought it up. I was literally about to say, we should share this with everybody. We should let them know. Well, I don't know. Ryan, if you want to edit this out, that's great. If you don't, just I'll be the heel turn. It's a heel turn. Oh, all you people, you didn't get it. Ha, 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 ha. So there, you have both versions. You can either make me a nice guy or a bad guy. I didn't realize there was a limit on that deal. But yeah, I mean, I prepaid for this thing. I was going to watch it no matter what. But the last few weeks between the trailer, between the increased, you know, interviews and presence of it, I think it might be really special. It's going to be our first Star Wars live action series.
I am ready. I don't want to wait anymore. I don't want to wait. Well, that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the pod. Buttoned up as usual. We didn't get too far off topic. Kept this one in line. And we'll be back for another pod next week. I would imagine there'll be more news because we're getting closer and closer to the Rise of Skywalker. This is beginning to get to that point where I think we're going to see little tidbits consistently until November 12th. And at that point, we'll be full bore into the Rise of Skywalker marketing campaign. So get ready for a lot of news and a lot of great discussions on this pod because we got a lot to talk about. What they wrote. Annie?
Pad down. We see a pile of rocks. Zoom out. And it's the ashes off a cigar from Pedro Pascal's mouth. Out of the other side of his mouth, we see a long strand of pasta shared with Gina Carano. This has been your Hot and Fresh with Chris.